The curfew tolls the knell of parting day. The lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea. The ploughman homeward plods his weary way and leaves the world to darkness.
You are listening to William Devon of the BBC reading Thomas Gray's Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard. A page from this week's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Each week at this time, the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the Young Men and Young Women's Hebrew Association of New York, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets, past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. This week, our guests, by transcription, Patrick Dickinson, William Devon, John Wingate, and Howard Reed. A few days ago, we received a letter from a serviceman stationed in the South expressing his appreciation of our anthology series and remarking how similar it was to a series which he had heard on the third program of the BBC in London called By Heart. We set a few wheels in action immediately, and through the courtesy of the British Broadcasting Company's office here in New York, we were able not only to obtain a copy of our English counterpart, but also permission to play an excerpt of the program for you today. Let's imagine, then, that we're in London. We stretch out our hand, flick the switch of the wireless, and hear...
The BBC presents By Heart, a series of readings of well-known poems. The reader today is William Devlin, and the program is introduced by Patrick Dickinson.
Gray's Elegy is perhaps the most often quoted poem in our language. Gray wrote it between 1746 and 1750... and it was published anonymously as a pamphlet with a preface by Horace Walpole on February 16, 1751. It was an immediate success, and I can think of no better poem with which to begin a series with the title By Heart. Dr. Johnson didn't like Gray's work, but of the elegy he wrote this: In the character of his elegy, I rejoice to concur with the common reader, for by the common sense of readers, uncorrupted with literary prejudice, after all the refinements of subtlety and the dogmatism of learning, must be finally decided all claim to poetical honors. The churchyard abounds with images which find a mirror in every mind and with sentiments to which every bosom returns an echo. Had Gray written often thus, it had been vain to blame and useless to praise him. Listen, then, to the poem.
The curfew tolls the knell of parting day. The lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea. The ploughman homeward plods his weary way and leaves the world to darkness and to me. Now fades the glimmering landscape on the sight, and all the air a solemn stillness holds, save where the beetle wheels his droning flight and drowsy tinklings lull the distant foe. Save that from yonder ivy-mantled tower the moping owl does to the moon complain of such as wandering near her secret bower molest her ancient solitary reign. Beneath those rugged elms, that yew tree's shade, where heaves the turf in many a mouldering heap, each in his narrow cell forever laid, the rude forefathers of the hamlet sleep. The breezy call of incense-breathing morn, the swallow twittering from the straw-built shed, the cock's shrill clarion or the echoing horn, no more shall rouse them from their lowly beds. For them no more the blazing hearth shall burn, or busy housewife ply her evening care. No children run to lisp their sire's return, or climb his knee the envied kiss to share. Oft did the harvest to their sickle yield, their furrow oft the stubborn glebe has broke. How jocund did they drive their team afield, how bowed the woods beneath their sturdy stroke. Let not ambition mock their useful toil, their homely joys and destiny obscure, nor grandeur hear with a disdainful smile the short and simple annals of the poor. The boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, and all that beauty, all that wealth e'er gave, awaits alike the inevitable hour. The paths of glory lead but to the grave. Nor you, ye proud, impute to these the fault, if memory o'er their tomb no trophies raise, where through the long-drawn aisle and fretted vault the pealing anthem swells the note of praise. Can storied urn or animated bust back to its mansion call the fleeting breath? Can honor's voice provoke the silent dust, or flattery soothe the dull, cold ear of death? Perhaps in this neglected spot is laid some heart once pregnant with celestial fire, hands that the rod of empire might have swayed, or waked to ecstasy the living lyre. But knowledge to their eyes her ample page, rich with the spoils of time, did ne'er unroll. Chill penury repressed their noble rage, and froze the genial current of the soul. Full many a gem of purest ray serene the dark unfathomed caves of ocean bear. Full many a flower is born to blush unseen and waste its sweetness on the desert air. Some village Hampden, that with dauntless breast the little tyrant of his fields withstood, some mute inglorious Milton here may rest, some Cromwell, guiltless of his country's blood. The applause of listening senates to command, the threats of pain and ruin to despise, to scatter plenty o'er a smiling land and read their history in a nation's eyes, their lot forbade. Nor circumscribed alone their growing virtues, but their crimes confined. Forbade to wade through slaughter to a throne, and shut the gates of mercy on mankind, the struggling pangs of conscious truth to hide, to quench the blushes of ingenuous shame, or heap the shrine of luxury and pride with incense kindled at the muse's flame. Far from the madding crowd's ignoble strife, their sober wishes never learn to stray. Along the cool, sequestered vale of life, they kept the noiseless tenor of their way. Yet even these bones, from insult to protect, some frail memorial still erected nigh, with uncouth rhymes and shapeless sculpture decked, implores the passing tribute of a sigh. Their name, their years, spelt by the unlettered muse, the place of fame and elegy supply, and many a holy text around she strews, let teach the rustic moralist to die. For who to dumb forgetfulness a prey, this pleasing, anxious being e'er resigned, left the warm precincts of the cheerful day, nor cast one longing, lingering look behind? On some fond breast the parting soul relies, some pious drops the closing eye requires. Even from the tomb the voice of nature cries, even in our ashes live their wonted fires. For thee, who mindful of the unhonored dead, dost in these lines their artless tale relate, if chance by lonely contemplation led, some kindred spirit shall inquire thy fate, haply some hoary-headed swain may say. Oft have we seen him, at the peep of dawn, brushing with hasty steps the dews away to meet the sun upon the upland lawn. There, at the foot of yonder nodding beech that wreathes its old fantastic roots so high, his listless length at noontide would he stretch, and pore upon the brook that babbles by. Hard by yon wood, now smiling as in scorn, muttering his wayward fancies he would rove, now drooping, woeful wan, like one forlorn, or crazed with care, or crossed in hopeless love. One morn I missed him on the customed hill, along the heath, and near his favorite tree. Another came, nor yet beside the rill, nor up the lawn, nor at the wood was he. The next, with dirges due in sad array, slow through the churchway path we saw him borne. Approach and read, for thou canst read, the lay graved on the stone beneath yon aged thorn. Here rests his head upon the lap of earth, a youth to fortune and to fame unknown. Fair science frowned not on his humble birth, and melancholy marked him for her own. Large was his bounty, and his soul sincere. Heaven did a recompense as largely send. He gave to misery all he had, a tear. He gained from heaven, 'twas all he wished, a friend. No farther seek his merits to disclose, or draw his frailties from their dread abode. There they are like in trembling hope repose, the bosom of his father and his God.
By Heart, Anthology's English Cousin. We'll be bringing you further programs in the series from time to time. Our thanks to the BBC for allowing us the privilege of hearing an excerpt from By Heart today. This week, America celebrates two important occasions: the opening today of National Brotherhood Week for 1955, and of course the anniversary of George Washington's birthday on Tuesday, February 22nd. In commemoration of these two events, we've elected today to bring you excerpts from Russell Davenport's poem of America, My Country, which appeared first in Life magazine and was later published in book form by Simon & Schuster. In his summary of the work, Louis Untermeyer pointed out that Russell Davenport has avoided the false rhetoric and the inflated pomposities. He has written something which is a continued set of surprises, an alternation of simple statements and exaltations. Perhaps this is because Davenport has felt more profoundly about his subject than most of his colleagues. Or perhaps, and this is just another way of saying it, it's because he is a poet, a full-throated mover and shaker of the American scene. Anthology presents excerpts from Russell W. Davenport's My Country. Joining me in the reading will be John Wingate and Howard Rieg.
America is not a land of ease. We have not paused from action to beget heroic simile and song and frieze. We have no empire of the mind as yet, nor have we shed our light within the grave. But as the sons of enterprise and sweat honor the quick, the strong, the free, the brave, the mind whose thoughts are cradled in the hand, the fierce emancipators of the slave exacting destiny of virgin land, we are the builders of dynamic things, successors to the spires of Samarkand, boilers and bars, propellers, wheels and wings to run and fly and dive at our behest, through which the mighty wind of freedom sings.
America is generous to the free, to those who ask no favor of the great and grant them none, except equality, the masters, not the minions of the state. To him who gives no margin to the snob, but thinks and breathes as freedom's delegate against the fashion or the gathering mob. All tongues and races are American. All nations are embodied in her job to breed the noble concept of a man whose freedom is that others should be free. Yellow or black or red or white or tan. This was the burden of the prophecy, when from the wharves of Boston and the whips there rose the blessed words of liberty upon the rebel pens and patriot lips. and she was ever generous to those who saw her first as promise from the ships, the empty-handed condemned who chose to risk the towering glamour of her shore. Italians, Slavs, and Jews, the D's and Do's who came with song and fiddle and guitar, and those of Spain and Crete and Singapore in pants of blue and shawls of cinnabar, and those of Ire and Cork, and those who bore in them the scars of Pinsk and Bucharest, the dusty orts of Kaiser, King, and Tsar, which still she gathered to her mighty breast, whereon the light of liberty sufficed to make their hidden splendor manifest, and every jewel among them equal priced by her own law, as in the word of Christ.
Country loves the lovers of her land, they who in spring behind the heavy plows rip up the sterile project winter planned, when brooks are like extended veins and sloughs have soaked the feet of every shivering hill, and in the April sunlight winter's cows crop the intoxicating chlorophyll, they who endure the agony, who share the lustful intumescence of the will to wake the larvae and enchant the fair and wistful flowers from the dark, and call the butterflies into the dusty air and orange honeysuckle from the wall, and the muscled will of pregnancy to squeeze from deep and planetary silence all that life has yet conceived or can increase, to load the land with hay and golden grain and vines and heavy corn and calves and peas, in light as hot as liquor in the brain, in August when the sun goes down so late, and willow trees, reflective and sedate, and crimson apples like the dreams of gain, or yet those others, restless ones, who boast some secret kinship with the course of fate, who haunt the hills with summer's screaming ghost when the New England trees disintegrate like incantations chanted to the frost, and all the jewelry of her land is lost, of which in summertime she was so fond, and carried outward on the beat of drums, the wings of wild geese far above the pond. These men who love, and those who see beyond the blindness of the earth when winter comes, when all the house is cluttered with its gear, and children squirm and struggle with their sums year after year beside the fire that hisses as it goes, the lean, far-sighted countrymen who hear the breath of living things beneath the snows, and feel the hope of heaven in their blood, and far below the frost, the glowing rose. The earthy men are those who have America to love and keep, her mountain tops, her daring clouds that scud above the dappled carpets that we reap, her rain, her snow, her forest fire, her flood, her dusty rains, her tidal hurricanes, her desert buttes, her lakes, blue-eyed and deep, her foaming rocks and shores, her silver veins. These are her men to whom she will confide the secret of the seed that she contains, which has so generously multiplied within the fertile pastures of her creed. The seed of liberty, which can provide, out of the dark and frozen depths of need, the love of man, the flower of the freed.
My country loves the lovers of her flag, the strong oracular emblem of her will, the spangled cloth of peace, the bloody rag above embattled gulch and smoking hill, like freedom nailed in pain against the sky. O flag most beautiful, most versatile, of all the banners men have lifted high, bright promise which the winds articulate, great seal of freedom raised to certify that man is fit to love and liberate. Spread over us the shadow of your bars, projected from the authors of our state. The red for courage like the heart of Mars, the white between the red for liberty. and shed the light of multiplying stars out of blue, majestic mystery of union under God across the earth, the blue of heaven, which is loyalty. Whatever we are worth, this flag is worth. Whatever we may dare to dream or do, we live in it as it in us from birth. Our will is cast in red and white and blue. Let us not make of it for bargainers, a rich and unregenerate parvenu among the empires and their connoisseurs, but as a universal sign to man, raise it above the states and ministers to show that freedom, called American, is carried for all peoples in our trust. My flag is bound by no meridian. Its realm is transcendental and august. It represents the hand of God within all creatures of the water and the dust. All nations made my flag. The Pole, the Finn, the English and the Irish and the Swede, the Czech who found in it his origin, the glowing French who helped to build its creed. All nations, north and south, the light, the dark, are in this flag and cannot now secede. Nor yet can we, the guardians of the spark, betray their freedom in our own behalf. Unless we free those lands, this flag will mark America as freedom's cenotaph, where faith for all the world was lost, and hope was hauled at dusk forlornly down the staff. It is not ours. We cannot bound its scope. What we have borrowed, we must now return to live in Earth's revolving envelope, which wings surmount and slow propellers churn. We must pass back the fire they pass to us, that it may freshen and forever burn. To those who live among the hideous ruins of fear, revenge and phobia, haunting their fallen hopes, cadaverous, bereft, and lonely for America, along the northern sea, or on the Rhone, or down the sad, majestic Letaba, O priceless flag, immense and sacred loan from heaven, which the earth cannot confine, raised first upon the ranger staff and flown above the muskets of the Brandywine, bright shred of Gettysburg and Belleau Wood, spirit of Tarawa and Kwajalein, symbol of struggle pitched in brotherhood, and many sovereigns held in unity. Old glory, guard the hopeful and the good, and lead us onward unconfusedly, that in our freedom, others may be free.
America is not a land of ease. We cannot live upon this soil enwrapped in the sweet safety of cerulean seas. Our multi-tongued Hesperian shores are lapped by war and discord, breaking in from time the mounting swells of human struggle, capped with envy, hate, rapacity, and crime. But ever outward, over all the earth, where deserts wait the skulls or eagles climb, we must put forth the products of our birth, our faith, our laws, the meaning of our will, our aeroplanes to weave a magic girth across the continents, to trade or kill, our bright machines, our medicines, our bread, our tireless vessels, armed or mercantile, our boys, our lovers and our loved, our dead who mark the beaches of democracy. Put forth not as in conquest, but to spread assurance of a world community from lone Ascension Island's foaming shore across Uganda to the ancient sea, and on from Basra through the eastern door with life and labor from the Chesapeake, to Prestwick, where the hornet engines roar like freedom in from icy Reykjavik, to Coral Isles and Polynesian joy, or through the fog to touch the future's cheek, the cold and desolate slopes of Stanovoy. Freedom is not an empty word. It springs from hands in Arkansas and Illinois. Its being is in men and thoughts and things forever born on keels and silver wings.
America lives in her simple homes, the weathered door, the old wisteria vine, the dusty barnyard where the rooster roams, the common trees like elm and oak and pine, in furniture for comfort,
not for looks, in names like Jack and Pete and Caroline, in neighbors you can trust, and honest books and peace and hope and opportunity. She lives like destiny in Mom, who cooks on gleaming stoves her special fricassee and jams and cakes and endless apple pies. She lives in Pop, the family referee absorbing Sunday news with heavy eyes, and in the dog, and in the shouting kids returning home from school to memorize the history of the ancient pyramids. And still she lives in them when darkness wakes the distant smells and infinite katydids, and valleys seem like black and fearsome lakes guarded by windows of American light, while in the wind the family maple rakes the loosened stars westward across the night. And still, however far her sons may go to venture or to die beyond her sight, these little windows shine incognito across incredulous humanity, that all the peoples of the earth may know the embattled destination of the free. Not peace, not rest, not pleasure, but to dare to face the axiom of democracy. Freedom is not to limit, but to share. And freedom here is freedom everywhere.
Thanks again to the BBC for permission to use By Heart, and to Simon & Schuster, publishers of Russell Davenport's My Country. Next week, a double birthday. Anthology will be 1 year old, and we'll also celebrate the birthday of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow as we listen to some of the poet's best-loved poems read by Donald Crisp. As our special guest, W.H. Auden, will talk about contemporary poetry and read from his newest book, The Shield of Achilles, which is published by Random House and will appear in leading bookstores across America tomorrow. Anthology is presented transcribed in cooperation with the YM and YWHA Poetry Center in New York. The program is an NBC radio production, written and directed by Draper Lewis. Until next week, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading.